From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 730, Improving Productivity Using Windows Virtual Desktop with guest Jen Sheeran, recorded Monday, September 14th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Jen Sheeran, who is an end-user compute specialist with over a decade of experience, and her areas of expertise are in Citrix virtualization, Citrix networking, and the Microsoft Windows Virtual Desktop on Azure. Jen is a Citrix technology advocate and a Microsoft MVP in enterprise mobility, and the founder of the USA Windows Virtual Desktop User Group, the CUGC Women in Tech Mentor, and one of the CUGC Tampa Bay leaders. She's passionate about technology, learning, and sharing with the community. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on. I hope things are okay in Florida because I'm over on the West Coast where everything is on fire. Even with time shifting, I don't imagine all the forest fires will be out yet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a crazy time. Everything tastes like smoke.
It is.
But I'm really excited to have you on the show because you've really immersed yourself in the virtual desktop world.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me again. Mm-hmm. I have worked many years in virtualization, and the last decade I focused, you know, primarily on Citrix, and then last couple of years it's Windows Virtual Desktop, you know, since the birth of last year.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but like Citrix led a lot of this innovation in virtualization going back literally decades. I remember using Citrix virtualization for doing testing on Windows apps in the 90s.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to date myself a little bit. Uh-oh. But yes, I remember that as well.
Okay. So we've both been doing this for a while. Of course, back then, the virtualization performance was terrible. It was just that it was easier to do multiple platform testing. Like I've got six versions of Windows I need to try with this installer. And it's easier to have a bunch of VMs, even if they're slow, to do that rather than to build all those machines.
Yes, it has come a long way. I remember those days, and you know, with virtualization and on the VMs on the host level, mm-hmm. it became just so much faster. Everything moved rapidly into improvements. So, yeah.
Well, the hardware got smarter about it, right? We got all our extensions and things, and the hypervisors got better, and here we are. Like, who does bare metal servers anymore, right? They seem to be, everything is virtualized.
Yes, exactly. I can't remember the last time I've been in the data center. I think it was probably in the 90s.
I miss them. I get an opportunity to tour an Azure data center once in a while, and I always take it just because it's kind of nice to see the big racks again. You know, I loved the hardware back in the day.
It is nice. I remember touring a CenturyLink facility with the internet backbone. That was very cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, during this pandemic, boy, the folks running the internet are struggling. Like, the demands are incredible. That was that BGP routing error that had happened a month or two ago that literally messed up like 10% or 5% of the traffic on the internet. That's a tough job. I don't envy anybody running backbone internet these days.
Yes, I agree. My job is pretty easy, and especially, you know, with the Windows Virtual Desktop mm-hmm. recently, you know, once your user gets logged in to the edge, you're on the Microsoft backbone.
Yeah, and bandwidth's usually pretty good and pretty stable. I guess that's the key, because, you know, we've been promised virtual desktop for 10 years? I mean, Zen Desktop on the Citrix side has been around a long time, but it doesn't seem to have taken off maybe as much as it should have, or maybe I'm just blind. Like, I haven't seen that. You have a lot of customers, like lots of folks using it?
Yeah, there's tons of people using Citrix. You know, Citrix has primarily been big in the medical industry.
Oh, interesting.
Right? So yeah, hospitals. And they changed the name a few times.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had the name changes. So it's now, Zen Desktop still one of the favorites. And,
what's it called now?
Citrix, Virtual Apps and Desktop.
I don't know if that's better.
So you have the virtual apps, the virtual desktop. Yeah.
Well, and, it's also nice to know that every tech company struggles for naming things.
Yes.
You know, it's hard. So we did a show a few weeks back talking about the work from home folks during the pandemic and that the virtual desktop on Azure can make a big difference. What have you done a few of these scenarios? How do you describe it?
I have. So the for the folks that didn't have something already, like Citrix or Horizon, you know, They were pretty desperate to get something up and running quickly. And when a lot of people were already looking at Windows Virtual Desktop, you know, POCs that, and it was just like a quick ramp up. And I did a lot of them, you know, where you just built out in a short amount of time. You were able, especially if they already had an Azure presence, which a lot of people do with Office 365 or Microsoft 365, right? They're able to just, you know, you already have Azure AD and synchronizing with, you know, Active Directory, domain controllers on premises. And it's easy to just add that Windows Virtual Desktop portion to it and give users a, you know, familiar Windows 10 experience with, you know, multi-session to, you know, keep the user density, or apps, right? So, some very successful, customers, education, you know, very important in helping teachers and kids be in school online.
Oh, wow,
really cool projects. And when we were all in lockdown at the very beginning, there was a, you know, it was a very difficult time. So there's a lot of use cases that I worked on.
What makes folks choose virtual desktop rather than just do regular deploys, like just use workstations?
Well, the any. You can give a person the ability to work from anywhere in a secure way, right? You don't have to send them a laptop or a device, right? You know, it's not just a laptop. You can send them an iGel and allow them to work remotely from anywhere. I mean, that's been Citrix for a long time. Any.
Right.
Anywhere, any device.
Nice.
And Windows Virtual Desktop, the same, you know, wherever you have a, you know, Microsoft Azure is global. It pops all over the world. And a lot of people started with their POCs before the pandemic. We're looking at, you know, okay, they had developers in other countries, regions to, you know, help with latency issues. And that's, you know, that was the start of the cloud taking over, right? So Citrix has cloud as well, right? Which happens to be, you know, Azure backbone.
They're all kind of overlapping there. So rather than, because I've talked to folks that literally took their employee desktops and sent them home. Rather than figure any of this out, really. So the idea that their home machine doesn't end up with company software installed on it, they're just able to go through a portal to a business desktop on that's virtualized. That's the goal. That's the reason to do this, rather than have to install software.
Oh, absolutely. And you can securely do that, right? You can have your conditional access, multi-factor authentication. And feel comfortable about doing that.
Yeah. No, if that employee leaves, they have nothing on their machine. Like, you just don't have that problem if you're working virtually, all this stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they have OneDrive integration for the documents and their files. And also, you know, you have your FFLogix for your profile data, right? All that cache metadata. And it really is nothing sitting on the user device.
Nice. That'd be a very, what do they run on their machine to be able to access this?
You can access Windows Virtual Desktop either via any HTML5 browser, or there is a remote desktop app, which is available on the Windows Store, the Apple Store, and, you know, also for Android devices.
And I presume the native app has better performance than the browser?
It is recommended, yes, yeah. Especially for Teams, right? Mm-hmm. The integration of Teams, which seems to be, you know, a lot of people want to do meetings, video, and audio takes up bandwidth, so you want to make sure you have the best performance there.
So actually doing video conferencing over a virtual desktop?
Yeah.
Holy man, that's crazy. Because, I mean, I always think of virtual desktop, and maybe I'm just thinking about this too small, that all you're doing is screen scraping and sending the screen information across the wire. It's got to be smarter than that to make video work.
Yeah, so there are integrations to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
No, the performance is great. I have seen a lot of people using it actually since this year.
Yeah.
It's meetings, even Zoom runs on it.
Zoom over virtual desktop. Okay. Now it's like, you got to try this. That seems vaguely impossible, but apparently it works. Of course, it's all about latency. Like, what's the solution there?
So Microsoft had this optimization pack that they released to work with, but it has to be on the client. You can't do it through the HTML5.
Right. So this is where that client makes a difference. It's smarter.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Although the browser mod is awesome because it literally means no install. Just any machine at any time can at least get access to something.
Right. Right. But the client is just an app, right?
Right.
The remote desktop app. And it updates automatically, you know, just like all your apps on your Apple devices or from the store, Windows Store.
If you're running on Windows Desktop and you're running on something like an iOS device, like an iPad, that's very touch-based. I kind of think that's a bit tricky to use. What's the integration like for using touch?
So I haven't really used touch because I don't have a iPad to test this on.
Oh, so
I can't
off.
Really tell you. I've had experience on that.
Yeah.
I know there's the stylus pen that people use.
Probably a better way to go because it's more precise for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
All right. This is really cool. I want to dive in a bit on the back end part because you sort of casually said Azure Active Directory. Like for me as the IT person getting it set up, if I'm already in Azure, I'm probably almost certainly using Azure AD, so that's easy. But if I'm not, this is the big commit then, right? Is getting Azure Active Directory up and running.
Yeah, you do need to be able to join the Windows Virtual Desktop VMs to domain, right? They must be domain joined at this time.
Okay. Must be, yeah. Because you could, I mean, I don't know that I'd want to set up separate accounts. It's just more accounts to manage. So this certainly solves that problem. But if you're not already in there, like that's a fairly high commit. Getting Azure AD is a lot of stuff. When you're doing this, do you have customers every so often? It's like, we're starting from scratch with Azure because we want to get to virtual desktop and you have to take them through the whole process?
Sometimes. Oddly enough, it hasn't happened a lot. So, you know, a lot of people already had an express route or a, you know, VPN gateway connection to Azure already. And, you know, domain controller, may or may not be in Azure.
Right.
So the sync was happening from on premises, which, you know, there's a delay with that, but you have to be able to sync the groups if you're doing that hybrid type of solution.
And you have a bunch of customers using Azure Express Route too, because that seems fancy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you do.
That's awesome.
It does need, you know, some setup.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not too much of a network person in that part
right.
of the world. But you do need to communicate with your provider, you know, to get some details to go ahead and set up an express route.
Right.
Work with the network team.
So yeah, express route is something you talk to Azure about and you talk to your ISP about, and it gives you that secure connection from your, from, is it from your office? Like, how does express route help in this scenario?
So you would set up, so whatever network connected devices you have on premises, you would, you know, work with your provider that connects you to the world to set up the Azure Connect piece for Express Route.
Right.
And then the, that's routed through with the provider. So it's a sort of a secure tunnel type scenario.
But also fast.
Yes, fast.
That's
right, a direct link.
That's awesome. And Jen, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Your users are on premises. Your users are on the go. Your users are using Windows Virtual Desktop. In all these cases, you still have the same problems. Windows is still Windows. Your apps are still your apps. Your browsers are still your browsers, and your users are still your users. Microsoft Group Policy, System Center, and Intune can only get you so far before you need to cry uncle. But don't panic. You've got Policy Pack. With Policy Pack, you get the power to manage applications and browsers in Windows 10, overcome application UAC prompts, block ransomware and unknownware, and dynamically configure the Windows 10 start screen, taskbar, and file associations. Policy Pack is an official Windows Virtual Desktop partner and wrote most of the sought-after free blog entries on how to get Windows Virtual Desktop up and running fast. With machines on premises, on the go, or in Windows Virtual Desktop, you owe it to yourself to see a demo of Policy Pack and then get started in just a few clicks. Learn how thousands of other administrators enhance their Windows Virtual Desktop and remote work scenarios. Come to policypack.com to learn more. That's policypack.com. Policy Pack, securing your standards. As a bonus, join Jeremy Moskowitz, Richard Campbell, plus MVP Jen Sheeran at the live one-day event entitled Policy Pack Lockdown 2020. Register your limited live event seat. Come to policypack.com/lockdown. That's policypack.com/lockdown for your seat on October 29th. And I'll see you there. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell, and that's Jen Sheeran. And we're talking a little bit about the Windows Virtual Desktop. So I'm still, we've got our connection. I think ExpressRoute's super cool, so I want some of that. Now, am I hosting the apps only still in my own data center, or do I have to put them into Azure?
So depending on what kind of apps you're running, right? So let's say you have an application that has a thick client install.
Right.
You would install that on Windows 10 like you would on any workstation or laptop, right?
Sure.
And if it has like an ODBC connection or something like that back into a SQL database, you would have to set that up, and that may or may not be in Azure. You may or you may still have that on premises, and then you'd have to be concerned with, you know, things like performance, right? Because you're going through that connection, but it works. You know, you can have that connection.
But just to be clear, Jen, you're saying if I have my SQL database still on-prem, that's fine, but that Windows 10 instance that is a virtual machine running in Azure, or can that also be on-premises?
No, the Windows virtual machine that does multi-session is only running in Azure.
Okay.
It's only provided in Azure. It's the special Windows EVD version.
Mm-hmm.
You can only get that in Azure. You can connect that to install your apps and connect back to, you know, shared resources. Access it through file share, maybe an SMB share. In the Citrix world, you could have your Citrix control plane running in Citrix Cloud and then use the Azure EVD version from Azure to manage it in the Citrix control plane.
Interesting. But it is, I mean, a real valid point that this is an enterprise only thing. You have to run in Azure to get multi-session working.
Yeah.
But you, if you've got those, you know, I talk to folks to this day, they're still like, no, my database has to stay on-prem. you can make that work. You're going to pay a performance penalty, I'm sure, but you can make that work.
Yeah. I mean, if it's working on Windows 10 now, right, it should be able to, right? There's always little gotchas with apps, but generally speaking, yeah.
Well, you said ODBC, so, you know, you talk about, I know you've been doing this for a while when you just drop ODBC like that, Jen. All right. So, yeah, I'm we're months into the pandemic, but I'm still seeing folks that are struggling with how do I get better performance out of this, let's say, be honest here, a legacy app that's normally a thick client running on a desktop, and maybe they're VPNing right now. So they've taken that risk and deployed that machine out to their employee's home, either on their machine or sent a machine out to them or a laptop, whatever it may be. And now we're rethinking it because it's not as productive. So if you can make that work, you can make this work.
Oh, yeah. Did you know that you could also have Windows 7?
What?
In Azure.
Oh, I read about that. Like they've extended the licensing for Windows 7 in the in virtual desktop. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
So you could spin up a Windows 7 in Azure and have the ability to run, you know, some of those old apps. Right. That require you to stay on 7. Yes. But yes, absolutely. You can run, you can, if it works, like I said, if it works today in 10, Windows 10,
right,
you can install it and present that desktop and the user just has to log in on either the client or, HTML5 browser. Click the icon, launch the desktop, and they are on a Windows 10, you know, Azure VM that has, you know, all their apps installed and they can access just like they were in the office.
Huh. And so I'm thinking through this now, thinking I need to build up like a Microsoft Deployment Toolkit or ConfigMan, sort of a gold template of a desktop that has all of the apps that my user is going to need rather than any one specific app. Or I guess, let me ask you the question then. Are people using this for a specific app or for their entire productivity set?
It's really user persona. So right. If the user needs a certain subset of apps, you know, you would probably break out based on that.
Mm-hmm.
But people are using it in that manner where you start with a base image, with the OS, and you add all your apps depending on what you're comfortable with. So if you have a package in solution already, on how you deploy your applications, you could just use that possibly, right?
Yeah.
And, or, you know, manual installs is always there. You install your applications and then that image then becomes your master to build out how many, because based on how many users you're going to have using Windows Virtual Desktop, you would then need to figure out what kind of requirements the apps have on vCPU and memory. Do you need a GPU? That kind of stuff. And you do have the ability to add GPU as well. And then you set a limit on the max number of users that can log in to that VM.
Right.
And there are options for that. You can do load balancing based on breadth mode or depth mode once you set that all up. So there's a lot of design decisions that you would go through in the beginning, basically, to understand the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And once you set that all up, then, you know, you're ready to go. You just can adjust as needed. So if you needed to spin up more VMs, you would just scale out, right?
And so they have this multi-session version of Windows 10. How many people can use one of these instances?
It depends on the workload.
Right.
So Microsoft has given us some guidelines on, you know, maybe a light user could be maybe six users per vCPU.
Right.
So you would then need to size your VMs as well, which is also another design consideration, right? You may decide that smaller VMs and more.
Right.
To handle your workload, or you may just do bigger, beefier VMs to handle more users at a time with less VMs, right? And cost also is always a factor.
Sure, absolutely.
If you're going to shut them down when they're not being used. There's automation you can do for that, right? To shut them down. Automatically.
So like after a certain amount of time of it not being used, it just shuts down?
Yes. So you could set a threshold to say that your users start from 9 a.m. You may want to start them up at 8 or 8:30, and then you can shut them down if they leave at 5. You can shut them down at 5:30 or 6 o'clock.
Now, presumably they log in and log out. So once they're logged out, doesn't it just automatically shut down?
Yes, you can shut down, right? Mm-hmm. You can do some things. There is some customization that you can run to do that. But if it would start off with they log out and leave the VM running.
Right. And then how long does it take for a VM to warm up from cold? Like you implied, like at 8:30, I would start lighting this up so at 9 o'clock they would have it available. I don't imagine it takes a half an hour.
No. It's actual minutes.
But it is minutes.
Yeah, 2 or 3 minutes a VM starts up.
That's fair.
It's pretty quick. It's pretty quick. I said half an hour in case you were starting 100 VMs or more or something like that.
Which I guess you could be, right? Like in some scenarios. How is the pricing? Or I mean, even just talking about licensing, like do I need to have licenses for all the Windows 10 instances? Like what are the rules here?
So the Windows 10 EVD license comes with your premium 1 or 2 license. So if you have an Office 365 license with that type of level, you may already have it.
Right.
You probably heard that they say it's free. it basically comes with that. And it talks to KVM. So, KMS. Once you spin it up, it communicates with the KMS server in Azure, and license is available. So if you're doing some, funky things with security where you're locking down everything,
right,
you may inadvertently lock down the access for the VM to communicate with the KMS server to get the license.
Okay. So, but it does need to go get a license. But if you're using Microsoft 365 and see new name, not Office 365, I mean, because why would we keep the name the same? I guess you're probably all right. Like that is licensed for this sort of thing.
Yeah. There's, different levels, premium 1, P1 and P2,
right.
I believe.
E3s and E5s, and I guess it depends. Yeah. And then is there a consumption cost to it as well?
So, yes, you would have storage costs, right?
Right.
Especially if you're going to use, which is recommended to use FSLogix for profile, persona, because you have a multiple users, they may not get the same device every time they log in.
I'm sorry, what is FSLogix?
It's a profile management.
So, oh, okay.
Microsoft purchased FSLogix a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember exactly when. And so FSLogix has been around for a while. It's a containerized profile management system.
Nice.
So what happens is when the user logs in, that VHDX or VHD, which is the container that sits on a share, is loaded into the OS as C users. So to the OS, it just knows that's C users, but it's actually a mounted drive. And when they log off, it unmounts. So it really helps with things like, file corruption. I don't know if you remember, you'd have profile issues with roaming profile.
Oh, yeah.
To delete the user profile and recreate it. That's almost gone completely. which FSLogix is a really good tool, and used other places, not just in WVD. I've been using it with Citrix for many years. I don't do Horizon, so I can't speak too much about that, but I do know that people are using it there as well.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, again, we start talking about the real complexity here is those dealing with those roaming profiles, and so you need the tooling to be able to do that well, which clearly FSLogix seems to be the way today to take care of that problem. So that people can customize their desktop and get it back off of any VM that they ultimately load into, especially at scale.
Exactly. Exactly. It roams with them.
Right. It follows them around. So it still feels a little more personal than just kiosking an instance of desktop. It's got nothing, you know, nothing personal on it at all. Wow. Okay. And it was interesting you mentioned, you know, you're talking to folks that were in proof of concept and suddenly they need to move in. Like, this seems like a technology that has been on sort of everybody's to-do list for years, but never made it to the top to actually get past the proof of concept. Is that what you found?
With the Citrix world, it has been more the on-premises Citrix.
Right. Right? Yeah. Just virtualizing in their own infrastructure.
Yes. Yes. And the cloud, everyone was just sort of like dipping their toe into it and trying to, you know, figure out. But yes, today, this year, it has been definitely fast forwarded.
Yeah. Just sort of driving all of that need forward. And yeah, it's going to be, I don't know that you can really estimate all the costs here, but it can't be more expensive than the other, than trying to do it remotely with everything. Right? There's a reason you want to virtualize this stuff. It's going to be more efficient.
Yes, it has been cost savings. I've seen lots of articles and documents from Microsoft about the cost savings. I think it's an accounting capex versus opex type of situation that people need to look at. But yes, well, I have seen.
Especially compared to if you've got high performance or high demand applications where you need big machines, buying a machine for every employee that might use this versus using these large scale VMs with lots of horsepower just when they need it, that's got to have some efficiencies there that, you know, arguably when you're doing those hard compute things, you're only doing them a few minutes a day. They could be shared around. Why have a machine sitting there for that peak use all the time?
Absolutely. And like with seasonal workers, you can spin up and spin down, right? And then you're not paying anything in off season.
Yeah. You're sort of Black Friday kind of crazy burst of work that you bring in a bunch of extra people to work on, and you just provision everything virtually so they don't have to take anything home. Your onboarding is going to be super short. It's just going to be a bunch of scripts.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very interesting to think in those kinds of dynamics and then only pay for what gets used in theory. I guess you certainly limit the ability for them to install games on the desktop when they're virtualized.
Absolutely. So, you know, policies, you do have, just like your traditional Windows group policies, you can set up your group policies to do as much as you'd like to lock them down. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so that's always a part of the challenge, and it doesn't get any easier just because everything is remote, but it's the same set of problems.
Yeah. And the nice thing about this is, you know, your staff is already used to, IT has already been managing Windows 10 for years, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the same skill set is transferred over. They just lock down the desktop the similar way.
Mm-hmm.
And all the infrastructure components are managed by Microsoft, NumPaaS.
Yeah. So you have actually a smaller footprint you ultimately have to manage. Are you finding most organizations end up in a mixed environment where some workers are working virtual desktops and some still have, you know, traditional in-place hardware?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are just hybrid at the moment.
Well, I wonder if hybrid's just the norm. Like, we're never going to go all of anything, really.
No.
But I could certainly see there's certain applications where, like, I don't want this installed anywhere other than in a virtual desktop. That's the only place that app lives.
Yeah. it may take some time to, you know, to get all virtual, you know, into the cloud. That's definitely, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I talk, you know, when I talk to folks like in the exchange world where it's like, oh yeah, we were moving exchange into the cloud, but ultimately never turned off our on-premises servers. There was always something left behind, like hybrid is forever. And I have to wonder, in, you know, maybe in a brand new organization, if we started out virtual from the get-go, it might be the only thing. But even then, I doubt it. Mixed is normal.
Yeah. At the moment, yes.
Well, Jen, thanks so much for this conversation. Really an interesting list of things to take a look at. And certainly a way, as we think about optimizing in the pandemic, working better than we have been, after the rush of just trying to get work from home to working, that this is an interesting solution.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this talk.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.